Welcome to the Independent Kiwi Radio Show. I'm your host, Paul Carruthers, and tonight we're going to be talking to Kevin Hester. Kevin is a New Zealander. He's an environmentalist and a very passionate climate change spokesperson and campaigner. And Kevin is responsible for the upcoming speaking tour this month, October 2014, in New Zealand, throughout New Zealand, of Guy McPherson, Professor Guy McPherson, who's a leading climate change, I guess, you know, one of the go-to people in the world. He's a very controversial figure. Clearly polarizes people, but then so does the whole subject, which is what we're here to talk about tonight, is climate change and the impact that it is having, as well as is going to have, upon society, the economies, our economy, you know, what it's going to do to law and order, basically how it's going to impact us in real terms across the planet. So Kevin has studied this subject probably more intensively than anyone I know, and he's a prolific spokesperson on it. So let's just get straight into it, Kevin, because I know it's a subject that a lot of people think about every day. They push it out of their minds, and I can only speak from my own experience, but I imagine I'm like a lot of other people. I just push this out of my mind whenever it comes into my mind. I see a really weird or random weather event or something really profound, like intensely strong winds or stuff that we're just unusual and happening with increasing frequency. And I try not to think about it too much because I kind of know it's happening and it's really sobering. But basically, it's so big that I don't know what to do about it. So what do I do about it, Kevin?
Well, you know, I think you've made some good points straight away. Climate change is the can that has been kicked down the road for the last 100 years, pretty much since the beginning of the industrialization of the planet. We've known that burning fossil fuels increases the CO2 level in the atmosphere. It's not a new phenomenon, but because it's always been a problem that was going to be sometime in the future, it's been ignored. Well, what most of the people who are heavily involved or deeply involved with climate change issues know now is that we have passed a whole lot of tipping points and we're now at the point of abrupt climate change. So this can is no longer going to be kicked down the road. This can is going to stop us in our tracks.
So how's that going to play out? What's your interpretation of how things are going to play out for all of us?
What I think will happen and is already happening, and most of us can see it, is we get extreme weather events much more regularly and of a much higher velocity and power. What we'll see is that the cyclone season, or depending on where you live in the world, the hurricane or typhoon season, will get longer and broader. So it'll be on much wider latitudes. The ferocity of those storms will be greater, and countries that never really before suffered from them will suffer from them. And then we'll get situation where with climate change, we're not just getting heating, we're getting extraordinary weather events in every direction. We're getting droughts, we're getting extreme cold events. Yep. And what that will do is completely and utterly destabilize the world's food production.
Okay. What's your time frame on this? Just, you know, for people, our listeners out there, what's your time frame on this? I've been reading articles leading up to this interview just to so that I can get a grasp on what's being predicted, and it's clear, it's coming through loud and clear that we're looking at famine and major crop failures and all the things you're saying, but no one's quite clear about the timeline. I haven't seen any clarity around that. Can you give us some idea?
Well, it depends on who you want to listen to. If you want to listen to the corporate media and the completely dishonest intergovernmental panel on climate change, they'll tell you that we're in trouble and we need to sort all these things out in the next 100 years. Right. Well, I and Guy McPherson both don't believe for a second that human beings are going to be on this planet in 100 years.
Can I just stop you there and ask you, are you saying, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but are you saying that you don't believe that human beings are going to be here in 100 years, or are you saying that human beings are not going to be here in 100 years if we don't change our ways? Because there's a very important difference.
Oh, absolutely. No, there is no way that humanity is going to survive. We've pushed our ecosystem way past the point of no return. And all we can do now by mitigating our carbon emissions, and I'm a firm believer in it, I totally want everyone to reduce their carbon emissions, but all that will do now is buy us time. But having said that, whilst I say that I think we should all cut our emissions, I don't believe for a second that it's going to happen.
So why would we do that now if you say that it's inevitable anyway because we've gone too far and we can't stop it from happening? I mean, that's the problem. Isn't there a catch-22 there where if you say to people, well, I mean, if you say it's important to explore this, if you say this to people, we're dead. We're doomed, you know, we won't be here in 100 years' time, doesn't matter what you do now. Shouldn't we all just go on a free-for-all and have the time of our lives?
Well, it depends on whether you've got any dignity and whether you've got any empathy and compassion for the other species on this planet. And this is one of the problems that we have with humanity, is that humans have had an absolute disregard and barbarity towards all of the other species on this planet. We farm them, we imprison them, we slaughter them at will without giving any regard whatsoever for our moral obligations towards those animals. So that's what I think will happen. It's not what I want and it's not what I believe in, but I don't see our barbarity getting any better. I see it getting worse.
Okay. Why? Is that in response to, you know, running out of corners to hide in here or what?
Well, what I think will happen is that the food production on the whole planet is on an exponential downward curve. Already we struggle to feed all the people on the planet. The cost of food and the availability of it is going to skyrocket. Well, you know, the cost will skyrocket, the availability will plummet, which means that first people, as always, to get the shit kicked out of them will be the poor. And then we will see different countries fighting over the food production and the land where it can be produced. Because, of course, you know, there's whole areas of the planet that are going to be uninhabitable and also unproductive. If you have a look at the moment in the Californian drought, if you Google it, Google Lake Mead and the Californian drought, they are in the middle of a probably multi-decadal drought. In fact, it may never, ever go away. And California is the food basket of the United States. It's an extraordinary situation that they're downplaying amazingly.
I mean, this is all very sobering. It's clearly not going to be what people want to hear. But at the end of the day, it's obviously you're saying this from a very well-researched point of view. I'm a bit stuck for words here, really, Kevin. I mean, what do we do? What's your advice?
Prepare for collapse. I think what will happen.
What does that mean?
Well, I think what will happen is we will have, on one hand, we'll have the collapse of our food, global food production. And on the other hand, we'll have these extraordinary weather events, which will be wiping out our infrastructure. We'll see power plants going down. We'll see. You'll notice that most nuclear plants are built either beside a river or beside the ocean. Reason being, they use more water than you can comprehend. It's stunning how much water a nuclear power plant uses. And we've
just for treated, cooling.
Sorry?
For cooling.
Yeah, we evaporate it. It evaporates it. And then we're going to have, when we lose the sea ice, we're going to have probably a 7-meter increase in ocean levels. And then if the Antarctic and the Arctic melt, we'll have even more. And then we have another phenomenon, which is as the oceans heat up, we have a thing called thermal expansion, which takes place in the water. The water literally expands in volume. So
as
not only do you have...
Yep.
Yeah, not only do you have the ice going into the oceans, but the ocean's expanding. It's going to be an extraordinary period in the history of humanity.
So are you suggesting that all land masses will be swamped with water, or are you suggesting that there will clearly be land masses poking out of the sea and we're all just going to effectively have to move uphill as we just ride this thing, as we just, you know, what are we doing here? Well, I mean, we're biding our time, waiting. What are we doing?
Well, of course, you know, if it's only 7 meters or something like 7 meters,
I don't think it quite plays that. That's actually quite hard to imagine. And, you know, a quick first thought about it. That's a huge amount of land, mate.
Oh, look, you're looking at places that low-lying countries like Bangladesh, they're going to have tens of millions of people are going to have to move off their land because it won't exist anymore. Climate Central brought out a paper recently where they said that if and when all of this ice melts, there's between 150 and 200 million people living on land that is going to be underwater. Think about it. Think about the climate change refugees looking for somewhere to go, and who's going to want them. It'll be the person with the biggest stick will be making all the decisions, just like it is today.
Yeah, well, clearly that won't change. So, let's just stop there on that particular train and of thought, and move on to merge it with another one. Okay, you've got how. Do you believe, first of all, that the major governments of the world, and let's say including the New Zealand government, are actually aware of all this?
Absolutely.
Do you think they do? So they are you suggesting that they are aware of and are planning for this eventuality, and they actually are? Do you think they have specifics around timelines?
I wouldn't know about how far down that track the New Zealand government would be. But why don't we talk about the government or the country that makes the most decisions on this planet, the United States? You can be 100% sure that the State Department and the White House know exactly all of these details that I've just spoken about, and they are definitely organizing for it.
How long have we got, mate? Seriously, you say less than 100 years. Have we got 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, 50 years?
It's a very difficult thing to do, to come up with a number, because the change is exponential.
Yes,
and
of course.
And that's the critical thing, you know.
Yeah.
We're not on a linear path anymore. We're on an exponential curve now.
So technically, as each domino falls and hits the next one, the next domino is technically bigger than the last one, because it's a chain reaction situation, correct?
Yeah. The technical term is positive feedback loops, where one thing gives momentum to another, which gives momentum to another, and that's where you get exponential hockey stick.
Did you just hear my sharp exhale, mate? It's just me. I'm just feeling very sober right now.
Yeah, it's a very difficult situation for everyone to absorb, and I advise anyone who starts thinking about it to really go carefully and don't get too negative and depressive about it. Now we're in a position where we need to figure out what we're going to do. Don't just throw our hands up in the air and panic.
Okay. Tell me again, why do you? Because I'm just trying to think. I can only respond like a total pleb on the subject, which I am, and I suspect probably a lot of my friends are too. So I guess the reactions I'm having to what you're saying will probably be similar to what they're having, I would imagine. So I might as well just keep asking questions as we go along, Kevin. I mean, one of the questions that springs to mind of what you're saying is, okay, you're saying that the weather events will get more extreme and all these other things, you know, probably seismic events almost certainly. I mean, goodness knows that I think we've had a greater concentration of seismic events in the last 20 years than in the previous 100. And it's something like a massive, it's an exponential leap in the number of seismic and the scale of the seismic activity. So it is clear that things are getting more extreme, but how can you be so certain that means this definitely spells the extinction of mankind? Give me some more indicators other than extreme weather and crop failures.
Increase in temperature. I think that's one of the problems we have at the moment. In the Arctic, there is a Norwegian expedition called Sverdrup that is up there monitoring methane hydrate discharges around the sea ice. And the Permian extinction, the last big extinction event that happened on this planet, was largely as a result of methane hydrates that were released from the from subterranean sequestration. And what's happening now is that our oceans are heating up, and these methane hydrates are being released in enormous numbers. And there's a possibility of gigatons of methane being released at a moment's notice, literally from now on. And methane is of an order of 40 to 100 times worse than carbon. Mm. So we've really let the genie out of the bottle.
Methane's extremely volatile, isn't it?
It can be, yeah. You can see, if you go to YouTube and look for fire on ice, you'll see people on the ice caps lighting methane vents coming up from underneath them.
Lovely. Okay. Cool. Okay. What do you think is going to happen to New Zealand?
I think that we will be invaded, and it won't be nice.
By whom?
Well, I think everyone. There's a mass migration already started of people wanting to come to New Zealand. And what will happen as things get worse, more and more people will want to come here. And the criteria will get more and harder and harder, or higher and higher. And it will only be what I refer to as the rich and ugly who will be allowed to come in. And then when you start looking at Guy McPherson says that the Northern Hemisphere will become uninhabitable first. And the reason is that the vast majority of the land mass is in the Northern Hemisphere. The vast majority of carbon emissions are in the Northern Hemisphere. And that's where the heating will happen most, which you can already see in California with these droughts, the never-ending drought that they're having. And I think that we will wake up one day in New Zealand and we'll be the 51st state.
Of the United States.
Yeah, absolutely.
Certainly seems to be headed that way. I think we ceded some time ago, didn't we? I think it was about 2008 that they annexed us.
Let me reiterate, I would really like to be wrong on this issue. If you come to me in 25 years' time and say, hey, Kev, look, it all never happened, we'll be able to shake hands and have a beer and I'll be as happy as Larry.
Okay, I want to throw something else in, just another thing that very few people think about. And very little people do any research on, but I have studied it and I have thought about it. And even NASA and National Geographic confirm that this is actually happening, and that's the issue of the Earth's magnetic field. How much bearing do you believe that the Earth's magnetic field activity is having on the weather and the whole climate issue? In other words, okay, let's take that one step further before I'll broaden that question slightly. Do you believe, first and foremost, that the climate change and the events that you're seeing happening are entirely man-made, or do you believe that it is a periodic thing that happens throughout history, which, say, possibly is being exacerbated by man's activities now?
I think both of those things. Okay. We could have had another extinction event like the Permian extinction, without human influence whatsoever. But what we've done is our carbon emissions have put this process on steroids.
Right. Okay. Okay, so because I've watched a documentary recently that talked about, and and the scientific evidence to support this theory has been is supported by NASA. It is supported by the National Geographic Foundation, and it was and it's been taken from to putting drillings right down into the Earth's core. You know, a long way down. So not to the Earth's core, but certainly kilometers down, many kilometers down. And then extracting the center of the core sample from the tubes that were put into the earth, that drilled into the earth, and looking at the magnetic shifts that have occurred over the millennia. In other words, so what they've done is taken massive, great, big, long rock samples by just drilling tubes down into the ground and then pulling the tube of you know, rock strata out and examining it. And what they've discovered from this is around about seven, well, certainly a number of times in the last few hundred thousand years or few million years, the Earth's gravitational field is completely flipped. It's completely reversed. And how they discovered this was just by looking over several kilometers of rock strata that was taken out of the ground in drillings, and they could, by carbon dating, they could tell what period in history they were looking at, and simply looking at the magnetic, which way it was pointing for the metal particles in the rock, okay, in the granite and things like that. And what they discovered was that periodically, every several hundred thousand years, the Earth's magnetic field completely and utterly polarizes. It completely flips. And looking at the rock strata around that time in the sort of in the the 1,000 years each side or the few hundred years each side of those where you could see those events culminated when the thing actually flipped. And when apparently when it flips, it happens very, very quickly. It's very quick. It's within hours. And what they discovered from it was that those events always came with massive seismic and weather events that created ice ages and floods and things like that. And they're theorizing that this could be contributing to what's happening now, because looking at rock samples that are far, far, far more recent, what it shows is that we are, and also looking at the Earth's gravitational field now as it sits right now, magnetic field, we are exactly in the middle, apparently, of the next flip. So, or we are in the middle of the tipping point where it becomes inevitable that it's going to happen, historically. Now, what they don't know is how long it's going to take to get from where we are to the point where the magnetic field actually flips. But what they're suggesting is that this is a significant contributing factor to all of these events that we're watching play out at the moment. Now, up until that point, I was always of the opinion that the concept of the Earth's magnetic field flipping was a theory, you know, that and I guess it still is. However, these guys have actually gone and done the hard yards and got the data and proven that it actually happens, and it's in the process of happening again now.
Yeah, I understand that, and I do believe that that is the case, but on the first instance, I don't know enough about it to give an informed opinion about it. But what I do know is it can take hundreds of thousands of years to flip, so I wouldn't be too concerned about it.
Okay, so what we're facing is far more imminent than that, correct?
Absolutely.
All right, you're with Independent Kiwi Radio Show, and I'm your host, Paul Carruthers. We're just going to take a break.
What you do.
And you're listening to the Independent Kiwi Radio Show. I'm your host, Paul Carruthers, and we're talking with Kevin Hester, a climate change campaigner and environmentalist. Kevin, you're bringing Professor Guy McPherson to New Zealand this month, October 2014, and I'm speaking to around New Zealand to talk about climate change. I'm imagining you're going to have packed houses. Where are you going to be? Which towns are you going to be going to?
Set in stone, we're having our first one at AUT University in Auckland on the 22nd of October. Then we're going to be in Palmerston North on the 28th and in Wellington and Lower Hutt on the 25th and 26th. All those events can be found on Facebook events pages.
So what we've talked about so far is that climate change is clearly, you know, there's no point being in denial about it. You've put forward a very strong idea that mass human extinction is now inevitable and will occur, in your opinion, within the next 100 years. And so it just comes down to how we each individually choose to live out our lives in relation to these events.
Yeah, absolutely. If I was going to suggest what people could do, I would say get out of cities. Cities will be the worst places. When the electricity goes off and the water stops flowing out of a tap, living in a city will be intolerable and uninhabitable. And I would advise people to try and live somewhere where they have access to land where they can grow food, because don't rely on your food arriving in your town on the back of a truck or a train.
And so what do you say, Kevin, to all the people that are sitting at home right now, and you can bet your bottom dollar there will be people doing this, sitting at home right now going, what a load of absolute crap. Everything will be the same. I'll just carry on and live my life and get my pension and this guy's a fuckwit. What is your response to those people?
Try and look and come up with a reason to say why it's not going to happen. At the moment, there are over 1,000 coal-fired power stations being planned worldwide. They're either under construction or in the consent process. The IPCC has been telling us for 26 years that we have to reduce our emissions, and we've never gone anywhere near reducing them. They're actually going up at a higher rate in the last 10 years than they have for a long time. Human beings have never existed on this planet when there's been more than 400 parts per million of CO2 in the atmosphere. We're over that. It's spiraling away, and now we have the issue of methane hydrates bursting out of the Arctic and Antarctic. If you think that I'm overstating the case, kick back and relax and just see what happens. And if you don't, get ready for collapse, because it's coming.
How is that going to play itself out, do you think?
Well, if you look around, the whole global economy is in hospice. Since the 2008 meltdown, all that they've done in the US and in Europe is print money to hide this problem. Yep. So they've never structurally reformed this crisis of capitalism that a blind man with no arms should be able to see. And now we're looking at that and the perfect storm of climate change both coming together at the same time. As these two catastrophic events collapse and crash together, how does anyone think it's going to be resolved? And who do they think is going to come to their rescue? I just simply can't see it happening.
So you think that the paradigm we're moving into now requires more personal responsibility than ever before? In other words, don't look to someone to save you. Don't put politicians on pedestals. Save your own ass. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Show some compassion, empathy and dignity, A, towards your fellow people. And also, I would like to see us doing it to all the rest of the species on this planet. We have treated our cohabitants on this planet with absolute disdain and barbarity, and it's an incredible indictment of our species.
Mm. Yeah, it is. It is. I think one of the things that we have done is we have placed the value, we have given money a higher value than human dignity, and we probably haven't even spared a thought for the dignity of animals. I mean, I've witnessed firsthand in my time how vicious and cruel and bitter and vindictive people can be about money, and violent, and people lose their dignity in the process. They either, people usually do one of two things around money. They either lose their own dignity or they strip another person of it because of money.
Yeah, and absolutely. It's a combination.
Those two activities. I think when I heard you use the term crisis of capitalism, that's the exact analogy that came to mind, was that people stripping each other of their dignity and stripping themselves of their dignity as well. And it's the single greatest cause of unhappiness in my life, is witnessing that on a daily basis.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. We just, as a species, we just went off down the wrong road. And it's been the road to Armageddon. And mostly the Armageddon has been suffered by our cohabitants. And now we've got to the end of that road and it's us that are tumbling down the cliff edge. And there's a certain justice in it. But the bad thing about this extinction event and the difference about this one and all the others, in the other five extinction events, the planet came back and was able to rebuild itself over, you know, millions of years, admittedly, but it came back. But the difference this time is when humans die, to my knowledge, there are 444 nuclear power stations on this planet. They have about 1,000 spent fuel pools. In the spent fuel pools, there's more highly radioactive enriched fuel than there is actually in the reactors. We will have 444 reactor meltdowns and all those radionuclides going into the atmosphere. And then we'll have these 1,200 spent fuel pool fires that will be fires like there's never been seen on this planet before. And they will aerosol those radionuclides right up into the stratosphere, and they will go across the whole planet, and they will change all growth in that planet for millions and millions of years later. It's an extraordinary situation. We're going to turn this planet into Venus, and it's this beautiful little planet in the habitable zone in our universe, and we've kicked it straight out of the habitable zone. It's quite an extraordinary story.
So men with brains in Uranus are going to turn the planet into Venus. How's that? It's just only someone with the mind of a bloody reptile could have invented this. It's just, I mean, Rutherford, I don't think understood how I think he was naive when he invented this. I think he understood its potential, but I think he was naive to assume that it wouldn't be used the way that it has been.
Wouldn't it have been great if we'd have listened to Albert Einstein? Einstein watched, and you know, the greatest mind of his time, one of the greatest minds of all time, he watched the splitting of the atom, and he recognized that it was an extraordinary achievement, but he knew that it was a catastrophic mistake. And
there was, because he understood the minds of men.
Yeah, and where it would all lead to in the end. You know, I remember him saying once, nuclear power is a stupid way to boil water, which is effectively how a nuclear power station works. It boils water, turns it into steam, makes high pressure, drives a turbine. Pretty simple technology at the end of the day once you've split the atom.
Let's assume that we weren't, you know, that there wasn't going to be a mass extinction event from climate change. Let's just put that aside for one moment. How does mankind solve the problem of bloody radioactive fuel? How do we get rid of this stuff?
Oh, you just find someone who's not paying attention and isn't looking, and you just stuff it in their country and run for it. That's the normal program.
Can we send it into space? What the hell do we do?
I don't know or understand whether there are other species up there, but if they're listening to this conversation, they're going to be even more pissed off with us than ever.
Yeah, that's true. So getting back to on the ground in the cities, and we're experiencing more and more extreme weather events, and things are getting more and more intense, and we're being put in a situation where a lot of things are being done. We're being told that a lot of measures are being taken for our, in inverted commas, security. You know, we're all being spied upon and surveilled, and we appear to be leading, I know in the case of many people I know, sort of grittier and grittier lives, I suppose, for want of a better expression. This economic collapse situation that you're talking about, or at the minimum, it appears to me, if we're going to have mass migration and entire food crop failures and all the rest of it, then economic collapse in the form of massive fluctuations, clearly, that are going to affect enormous amounts of people. Some people are going to get even more wealthy. Some people will just get, you know, enormous amounts of people will become spectacularly poor. All of those things happening, how do you advise people? What would you say to people in terms of what steps would you start taking right now to make life bearable for yourself, for say in 10 years time or 15 years time? What's small and possibly even seemingly insignificant, but what practical steps would you advise people to take now to try and have some bearable life in the future?
I would suggest to people that they absolutely minimize their consumption and learn how to live with a lot less consumption, to surround themselves with like-minded people who have empathy, integrity, and compassion for themselves and for other species, to look for somewhere where you can grow food and there'll be running water. Mm-hmm. And I would suggest that they learn how to make things, fix things, grow things, and cook things without all of the bells and whistles that we live with now, with electricity, with hydrocar, you know, with fuel for cars, all of these things. I have a solar-powered house. And it's great having it, but it is pissing in the wind in terms of trying to achieve anything on a global scale. But it is handy if you can come around to being self-sufficient in some way, shape, or form.
You do realize that the majority of people listening to this will just be squirming at the idea of any of this?
Absolutely. And, you know, I hate being the harbinger of bad news, but one of the reasons why I'm bringing Guy McPherson out to New Zealand is we're all entitled to be informed. We're entitled to know how bad the situation is. No one has to agree with myself or Guy. We want to create a debate, and let's have that debate, and let's decide where we want our country to be in the 5, 10, 20 years as this nightmare unfolds. We made a catastrophic decision a few weeks ago where we elected Washington's man in Parnell to be our prime minister again. And I think that is going to turn out to be a very, very big, sad mistake that this country's made.
How do you think that's going to play out? Because a lot of people are worried about it. Kevin, what's your take on it, mate?
He will do whatever his masters in Washington want.
So how's that going to work? What does that mean for us on the street? What are we going to be seeing?
We will see ourselves drifting more and more to be more like the United States, more under the wing of the United States, supporting the United States in these barbaric wars that they are starting all around the planet. All our great reputation that we've built up over the years with anti-nuclear and anti-apartheid and standing up against the big guy is going to all be kicked to the curb by this incredibly horrible government.
Do you think our land is going to start getting increasingly sold?
Absolutely. Wait until you see it. We're going to see a migration beyond comprehension. And, of course, they've already set the parameters here where the only people who can come in now are wealthy people. And anyone can buy their way in. You know, you look at some of the examples that we've seen in the media recently, people with criminal convictions buying their way into the country, no problem at all. And yet we've never, ever honoured our obligations under the United Nations conventions towards refugees. It's an appalling situation.
Yeah, certainly not. It shows a lack of compassion, that much is certain.
Absolutely. It's so sad.
So it's a lot of information for people to absorb. What's your take on things like recycling and all the little litsy-bitsy things people can do every day, like go and buy a Prius, you know, all that type of thing, go and buy a hybrid car? I mean, are all those things worthwhile, or what do you reckon?
They are worth, well, some of them I wouldn't suggest to go and buy a Prius. I understand why people think like that, but I think the recycling and all of those things are a good idea. But remember that ultimately it is not going to save us. It does make us feel better. And one of the things that I believe is that we're allowed to complain as long as we don't say too much. They get us to do a whole lot of these things, and they're good things to do. But a lot of people think that they've done their bit and then they give up at that point. And that's the mistake. I think that we shouldn't be building any more cars. There's more than enough cars on this planet now. There should be a moratorium on making any more cars, and we just keep the ones going we've got. There should be a moratorium on oil exploration. Desmond Tutu said this recently in New York at the climate change marches. We will never be able to burn all of the hydrocarbons that exist on the oil companies' balance sheets. If we, they're all stranded assets that are going to be worthless because we're never, ever going to be able to burn them. What is the point of going and looking for more oil? It's the behavior of junkies. The junkie just needs another fix. It's extraordinary to watch.
What's your take on the recent announcement about the Rockefellers divesting of all of their oil investments and getting into clean energy?
Pure pragmatism. It's got nothing to do with morality. They've made all their gazillions out of this nightmare of CO2. They know that most of those assets are stranded. They're never going to be able to bring them out of the ground. What they're telling you is confirming what I'm telling you. The fact that they're getting out of the, when the Rockefellers get out of the oil industry, you know it's toast.
So, okay, I can see where this is going. I'll paint a picture and you just tell me if I'm right or wrong. What I just saw, what I just got from everything you've told me, is that the Rockefellers are throwing their money at clean energy because we're in a tipping phase where people are suddenly going to start going, oh my God, this climate change thing is actually real and it's unstoppable and shit, we better do something. So we'll go and buy all these clean green things in the hope that that will save us. And Rockefeller's just, he's just going to go ka-ching like he has done, their family have done for the last 100 and something years. Is that right?
Yes, to a degree, and there's one thing I would add to that. I'm not just saying that particular family, but that industry has controlled us by controlling the narrative around fossil fuels. When you see these kind of people moving into the renewable sector, it's only because they will be able to control it and us.
I want to read you a list that I read last night on a website, collectiveevolution.com, and it's an article entitled 10 Shocking Facts About Society That We Absurdly Accept As Normal. I'll read these 10 things out to you, and I'll be interested in your opinion at the end of this. 10 facts about our society that we oddly accept as normal. 1. We prioritize money and the economy over basics like air, water, food, food quality, and our environment and our communities. So we prioritize money over basically life. We utilize an economic trading system that facilitates the death of millions of people each year and animals. We divide the world's land into sections and then fight over who owns these sections. We call some people soldiers, which makes it okay for them to kill other people. We torture and kill millions of animals every day, needlessly, for food, clothing, and experiments. We send children to school for their entire childhood to memorize facts and skills that they will rarely use. We impose financial pressures on parents, forcing them to miss out on vital stages of their child's development. We have thousands of religions, each one believing that their God or God story is the only true and unique version. Love and compassion, which promotes life, are mocked as facile and weak, whereas war, which harms life, is seen as honorable. Anyone with a really useful invention can forcefully prevent others from using it or modifying it. And that pretty much explains our entire paradigm, or certainly the Western paradigm anyway. What do you think of that?
I cannot fault it. It is a stunning piece of oratory, and it sums up the total weakness in our system and the people who control it. It's a great quote. Well done.
So I tell you what I get overall from this conversation, Kevin, and that is that the message that I get from it, and I can't speak for anybody else, but for me, loud and clear, is that I've got to own my stuff. I've got to own my conduct in terms of my relationship with the environment, in terms of my relationship with the planet that supports me, and not just with my fellow citizens, the people I share the planet with, but I need to become more thoughtful and gentler in terms of my relationship with the land that supports me. Is that, that's what I get from this conversation.
That sums it up really well. I think we need to, in these terribly dark times that are coming, we need to show some dignity and we need to show some humanity. And humanity is a behavior that humans tragically lack. And yeah. I don't want to sign up for that. I don't want to be one of those people. And I don't want to stand and fight my ground. I just want to challenge you.
Stop. Just stop there for a moment. I want to challenge you. To me, there is a difference between human nature and human conditioning. I believe with all of my heart that it is the nature of the vast majority of human beings to love and be compassionate and to show what care they can afford, they believe or feel they can afford to show for their fellow human beings. But I believe human conditioning is a totally different thing. And human conditioning is where we have become completely desensitized to our environment and desensitized to the needs of other people and the suffering of other people because of our need to maintain our income in terms of money. And that has put us onto a treadmill that we have to run increasingly faster just to keep the same amount of money coming in. And therefore, with the less and less we can afford to care for the people around us. That is human conditioning. But I want to believe, and I want to keep believing, and I think I'm too afraid to stop believing this because I think my will to live might die with it. And that is, I want to believe that the vast majority of people are like me, that they do care.
It's a good distinction. It's a very good distinction you've made, and it's right. It's true.
And I only say that from the point of view, mate, is I've lost count the amount of times I've teetered on the edge of losing all faith and hope in humanity. I don't want to do that because I think you stop trying when that happens, mate. And I think that I'm afraid of becoming too cynical.
Oh, absolutely. Chris Hedges, when he spoke at the Climate Change March in New York, and Nikki Hager, interestingly, said the same thing. The parallels between what two of my heroes said was, don't let cynicism stop you from acting. And it's very important. You know, sure, times is bad and the outlook is bad, but don't be pessimistic and cynical. Be conscientious and positive and try and take some good out of it and share that good around.
So basically, we just don't want to become cynical.
Absolutely not.
No, don't lose your dignity. All right, Kevin, been really good talking with you. Thank you very much for being my guest tonight. It's been really, really informative and, big, certainly big, and very revealing. And I hope our listeners got something out of it too. So thanks for being on the show, and hopefully we'll have a chance to talk to you again after Guy McPherson's tour and see how that went. Good luck with it. And I'm sure just guiding people to Facebook, they can find information on Guy McPherson Speaking Tour of New Zealand on Facebook, and Kevin Hest is the man who can point you to it. So thanks, Kevin.
Thank you very much for both your and Vinny's time and all the hard work that you do. Your hearts are in the right place, and I admire the both of you.
Thank you. You're with the Independent Kiwi Radio Show. I'm your host, Paul Carruthers, and thanks for being with us again, and we'll look forward to talking with you next time.